On January 8, 2025, the European General Court set a new precedent when it ordered the European Commission to pay a monetary judgment to an individual in Bindle versus Commission. This decision is noteworthy as it is the first time the European General Court has ordered individual damages to a plaintiff. Today, we are excited to interview the plaintiff in that case, Thomas Bindel, and one of his counsel, Peter Hensen. But before we start, let me introduce myself and our two interviewers, Lynn Parker-Dupree and Nessa Kandeker. Lynn is the leader of Finnegan's privacy practice and is based in our DC office. She focuses on privacy compliance, governance, and counseling for clients navigating the dynamic legal and regulatory privacy landscape. Nessa is based in London and focuses on the full spectrum of IP rights, privacy, and advertising. Both Lynn and Nessa are thus perfect for the job of getting to the core issues of the Bindel versus Commission case together with our guests, Thomas Bindel and Peter Hensen. My name is Julia Bradovich-Walz, and I practice patent and trademark law in our Munich office in Germany. However, I originally started out in IT law and data protection, which is why I am thrilled to introduce this deep dive into European privacy law with the milestone-setting case of Bindel versus Commission. Now, it is my pleasure to hand it over to our interviewers, Lynn and Nessa, as well as to the plaintiff himself, Thomas Bindel, and one of his counsel, Peter Hensen.
Thank you both for joining us today. We're very excited to speak with you about this case because you've recently filed an appeal. But before we get to the latest developments, we'd really like to begin with the original complaint, which stems from your visit to the European Commission's website for the Conference on the Future of Europe. And in that complaint, you asked the General Court for three things. First, you asked them to annul the transfers of your personal data to third countries that don't have an adequate level of protection. Second, you asked them to declare that the European Commission unlawfully failed to define its position on your request for information in April 20 of 22. And you asked them to order compensation for non-material damages, which you assert were sustained as a result of infringing on your right of access to information and transferring your personal data abroad. So with that being understood, can you please just give us an overview of the circumstances that led to the allegations in your complaint?
Of course, more than happy to do that. And first of all, thank you for having me. So basically, maybe to give you a quick background why this came in place, I've done about 20 years or 25 years of software development. So I'm tech savvy, but not a lawyer, not a legal guy. I'm a tech guy. And but recently, over the last 5 years, got more and more interested into data privacy and GDPR and consumer rights. So at some point, for private reasons, out of curiosity, I stumbled across the website of the Conference of Future of Europe, and there were a lot of events that were promoted on this website. And in order to sign up for these events, it was necessary to log into the website. And when I saw the login options, one of these options was to register with the European Commission. Another option was to use Google login. Another option was Facebook login, which I thought was quite handy, since obviously Facebook login is a convenient way. But at the time when this was offered, there was no adequacy decision in place. Nevertheless, I thought, well, the Commission has this offer in place, so let's use it. I'm pretty sure they're complying with the relevant laws. So I signed up through the Facebook login, and later on I realized, okay, this is weird because there was no additional information about data transfers to third countries, etc. So I looked into the website and I made an information request to the Commission, which more or less came back pretty empty. And that's how the entire procedure started. Since I thought it's a little weird that the European Commission should be held to the highest standards and meet not only the minimum standards, but should go be as good as possible. Neither answered information requests completely, nor did they obey the TRAMS 2 ruling. So that's how it started, and that's when I got started talking to Peter and Tillman from Spirit Legal.
You basically described everything as it happened, and I would like to say that at the core of the judgment there is the claim for compensation for non-material damage in the form of state liability. That's a fact that is sometimes overlooked here. So we have the specific requirements under Article 340, para 2 of the Treaty of the Functioning of the European Union. And this remedy under union law is characterized by specific requirements that distinguish it kind of from the traditional claims under Article 82 of the GDPR. So in addition to the actual and certain non-material damage and the causal link between the damage and the violation, non-contractual liability of union bodies requires particularly a sufficiently serious breach as a third condition. And well, the court saw that at least in part.
Thank you for that really interesting background there. So as we understand it, there were several entities involved in this, and that the General Court made a few different findings in the matter kind of related to the various different transfer mechanisms. And we'd love to run through those with you. So maybe firstly, could you tell us a bit about what they found regarding data transfer via Facebook?
Yeah, sure. I mean, as Thomas briefly explained, so in the end, the court granted the claim for damages related to the unjustified data transfer, albeit just for the transmission via the EU login system to Meta platform servers in the US. And the court referred to the prior ruling of the Court of Justice almost 8-9 years ago, and confirmed that IP addresses already constitute personal data, dynamic IP addresses, because they can be traced back to an individual person, if that is actually the case, which is possible for Meta in this case. So, and this was consistent with recent case law, for instance, the TCF case. So from our perspective, and this was like a huge part of the oral hearing, was not reflected in the written grounds of the decision, unfortunately. So a lot of the oral hearing revolved around the fact that, like, whether the commission could do anything to prevent user data, be it an IP address or something else, from being transferred to the US through the infrastructure, CDN, or servers, or however it reached basically foreign countries, this small part of data. The IP address in this case was basically pass pro toto, so like just a placeholder for something that could have been bulk data. And well, in the end, the court said, well, this was an unjustified transfer because at the time there were no additional safeguards, no SEC standard contractual clauses in place, no privacy shield of any kind. And that's basically when they said, yes, you as a commission, you deployed this tool, you commissioned this tool, and therefore you're liable for the use of these tools, of the login tool and the subsequent data processing and data transfer.
Thank you. And we understand that there was a slightly different finding regarding the data transfer via Amazon CloudFront. Would you be able to talk about that a little bit, please?
So basically what is happening here, to give you the background, the website by the European Commission is hosted on a content delivery network, Amazon CloudFront, which means that the way it is set up, or the way it's supposed to work, is that requests from a user are always answered from a server that is close by. So in a theoretical world, a user that lives in Munich gets answers from a server in Munich, a user that lives in London gets an answer from a server in London, and a user that lives in New York gets the answer from a server in New York. That's the idea behind it. Unfortunately, the way these content delivery networks work, it's not always easy to predict the location of the consumers. simply because when a server answers a request for some information from the server only knows which other server requested that information, but they don't know the IP address of the user. So it's always an estimate. So when a server, when you log in, I don't know, for example, from Starbucks in London, it might happen that Google or Amazon or another CDN service thinks that you're actually based in the US or in Paris or somewhere else and will answer accordingly. And this is exactly what happened. So the requests to the website of the European Commission that I made were answered by servers in Munich, also other parts of Europe, but also from servers in the United States. And that's weird initially, since it shouldn't happen, but it happens in cases, and there is actually research around this out there. But what the commission claimed was that they were setting it up in that way, so when there is a total catastrophe in Europe, when there's no servers neither in Lisbon nor Stockholm nor Rome or Warsaw to answer these requests, because everything is dark in Europe, they need servers in the United States to answer questions of European consumers who are worried about or interested in the future of Europe, which makes you think, or at least me think, as an end user, if it's really necessary that this website is up, everything else is down. But obviously, this led to a situation that my data of how I'm interested in the future and the political future of Europe got transferred to a US cloud server in the United States, owned and operated by Amazon.
Thank you. So yeah, that's really interesting hearing the detail that weren't like reflected in the judgment. So my final question regarding the general court decision is, what did they hold regarding the non-material damages, and if there's any kind of nuances to that which weren't quite captured in the written judgment?
Interesting question. So their decision was kind of surprising for us, because we thought, like, if there's one thing where the court cannot, like, can't say no to, that's like damages for the non-response of the commission to the data subject access request. But that's exactly what happened. They said, well, they told you something, even if it's formally like not, or it's materially not very helpful. It's just in the form of a response and doesn't contain all the information, it still doesn't give rise to damages. That was strange. That's also one of the grounds for appeal, and also contrary to the CJU decisions, like the not the general court, but the CJU in that case. So we were kind of surprised by that part of the decision. And then they granted in few words by saying that basically, yeah, they didn't mention loss of control, but like they kind of mentioned it, for the transfer, then 400 euros may be an adequate compensation for suffering that type of not knowing where my data went, which is similar to loss of control, which is one of the categories of damage that the CJU has already recognized in about like 12 different decisions since 2023. So yeah, that was one surprising, but again, also a bit disappointing. So grounds for appeal.
I mean, if I may, I think the from a consumer or from a user perspective, the fact that even years after requesting information from the commission, and years after the proceeding started, I still don't know and have absolutely no idea what information is being processed and stored by the commission. Feels really weird. This shouldn't be necessary. And also the fact that the information that was transferred to Facebook via their login or in the pixel is still unknown is weird. And a lot of people, I think, argued about the amount of damages, that the 400 euros is too much, and there was not a lot of explanations in the judgment. But if you actually carefully read the judgment, like the entire, like from beginning to the end, and look at the what they said about the damages and disadvantages and the loss of control, or however it's worded in English, it's not really surprising. But you have to look at the aggregate judgment to understand why they think that the 400 euros is valid. And I think it's what surprised us that they awarded it only for this violation, since we argued the transfer of the data for AWS and Facebook should be awarded 400 euros. But obviously, we don't mind that. And it shows that the General Court actually wanted to give, saw the damage that happened and the loss of control, or the uncertainty, I think that's how they worded it, is a damage. And that's exactly the case. Since, as I said, I have no clue what data they have about my political interests in the future of Europe.
Yeah, to just add like one obvious point to this, in the margin number 197, the court actually said, like, putting the applicant in a position of some uncertainty as regards the processing of his personal data, and then they awarded damages regarding the IP address, but they didn't award damages regarding the whole lot of uncertainty with regard to the data subject access request. So that seems to be some kind of contradiction, especially if we consider that the right to transparency, the right to know, is based on Article 8 of the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union, and therefore should have like has a high value needs to be compensated if violated. So, well, we'll see about that, what the CJEU will decide on that specific part of the case.
So you just mentioned some aspects of the grounds for appeal just there, but just so that we clarify for our listeners, in March 2025, you filed the appeal based on three grounds. So the first related to the court's rejection of your request to annul the data transfer. The second ground is based on your assertion that the court incorrectly assumed your request for information had been resolved. And third and finally, that the court did not sufficiently consider the alleged violations related to your right to access to information and the principle of transparency. Now, as I mentioned, you touched on this a little, but can you give us more detail about why you brought these claims up for appeal and the impact that they may have on the case overall and data protection rights for the public in general?
I think the first part is the rather legal, technical question, but in the end, I think the big question is how can we, as a consumer or as an end user, how can I have a legal proceeding that actually enables me to have control of my data against a body of or institution of the European Union? So it's rather technical. The second thing I think is very fundamental, as Peter just mentioned. Like if somebody stores your data, if somebody processes your data, and then you ask them what kind of data are you storing, who are you sending it to, who has access, how long are you storing it, and the answer is very, very, very brief to non-existent. I'm not sure if there is enough transparency. The fact that any answer, and just saying, well, we got some, end of story, it should be enough, obviously, is very, very strange. I mean, there's millions of companies out there that have a hard time trying to be within the limitations or within the legal framework of the GDPR, which is a very similar, almost identical legal framework. And they're trying to give their best to answer DSA requests, etc. And European institutions just don't have to do that. That doesn't feel right. So that's why we appealed that part. And the third part is obviously the fact that not knowing this information is a loss of control. Like I have no clue what's happening to my data, what data is in place. I mean, during the proceedings, they actually used some log files as evidence that we didn't even know existed because it wasn't transparent in the privacy notices. So I just have absolutely no clue what they have. And this uncertainty should be awarded some damages. We claimed €800 for that, I believe. So we are looking forward to what the CJEU will say about that. And since the Commission also appealed, the €400 that were awarded by the General Court, the interesting part will be what's happening with that. Simply because the fact that this €400, to me as an individual, obviously isn't that big of a deal, but dealing with my function as founder of EUGD, tens of thousands of consumers that are affected by GDPR violations, and the courts having a hard time awarding damages, just saying, well, nothing really happened. People still have their arms, their legs, and their head. What are they complaining about? It will be interesting to see how the CJEU will handle a case where they actually have to deal with real world numbers. Is it €400? Is it more? Is it less? And especially since this case could be replicated tens of millions or hundreds of millions of times with Facebook users across Europe. So this might be an outcome that could have huge consequences, but we simply don't know. And in the end of the day, it's not about the €400 or €800. I think it's having legal certainty for consumers, but also for companies that are trying to stay within the limitations of GDPR and trying to make sure that they have a legal basis for their data processing. And that's what makes it so interesting going forward, especially with discussions around US EU data transfers being at risk in today's world. Peter, feel free to add, or please do.
Yeah, very quickly. More on the technicalities. One of the grounds for appeal was to annul the transfers by the Commission. The action for annulment is the only action that is that was feasible in this case, because we can't. There is no cease and desist order. So annulment means basically having the Commission to stop transfers that are not secured. That's a noble goal. They should simply uphold the rule of law. That's all we want. And the argument from the General Court in their decision was very different from the one that they voiced during the hearing. That's why we are quite confident that there is something to be discussed at the CJEU level. They even explicitly said that, why shouldn't we declare unlawful, in that case, annul data transfers, because they have a legal effect without a legal, because of course your data can be accessed in the US, and the legal ramifications of data transfers, there are whole commentaries, whole libraries written about that, so you can't say it does not have a legal effect, one, and again, you already mentioned transparency is one of our fundamental rights, transparency regarding your data processing. So I'm not talking about the damages or the amount of damages or whether 100, 500 or 1,000 euros are a sustainable number here, but I'm talking about, like, if we have a fundamental right, and that's something we've been discussing with our, especially our UK colleagues, because they always claim, but you need another type of harm. No, violation of fundamental rights. A violation of fundamental rights is already a damage and requires compensation. So we want clear words from the CJEU on that part. And if you do not materially fulfill your obligations under primary law of the European Union, then you have to compensate your citizen, in that case, data subjects. That's basically it. So to wrap it up, we are looking forward to the next stage in this very interesting case. And from our experience that with the general court, the judges were extremely well prepared. The commission was really badly prepared. And we hope it will stay that way.
Thank you so much for the discussion of this case and of your appeal. As we discover, the key points of your appeal include your request to annul the transfer, which means the commission should stop transferring data outside of the EU, the assumption that your information request was resolved, and the alleged violations related to your access rights and transparency. I think it will be particularly instructive for businesses around the world to understand how the court will interpret what constitutes sufficient transparency for a data subject access request, such that an individual is able to understand how their data is processed, and the viability of the concept of uncertainty and the loss of control of your data as a means for individual damages. So we'll continue to watch this case very closely, and we thank you for your time today.
You're welcome, of course, and all your listeners too.
Thank you for having us, and happy to give insights when there is an update.
Well then, thank you to everybody for joining us today, especially to you, Thomas and Peter. We will, as Lynn just said, continue to watch your case very closely and hope that we can speak to you again very soon as things develop.